Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. This week, we continue our 7th anniversary celebration with a story from my dear friend, Hannes Finney.
I got one of those phone calls last year. You know the kind of phone call, I mean the bad news phone call. Of course, I thought I was completely prepared. But as usual, I was full of shit.
So this isn't necessarily a happy story.
My brother Dave, schizophrenic. He spent the last 30 years, really, probably more than 30 years, eating junk food and smoking and smoking and smoking and smoking. That was his primary. So when I got a call saying that he had cancer of the tongue, which had spread to the throat, that was a call I'd been expecting.
Oh, that's really horrible.
It's gonna suck. It's gonna smell bad. Everything is gonna be terrible. But when we leave, we're gonna go to Culver's and get deep fried cheese curds.
Today on Storyworthy, comedian Hannes Finney talks about going back home to find closure. Stay close.
Hey, it's Hannes Finney. Did you miss me? I'm not wearing pants. And you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I'm so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you've been a listener for 7 years and are a longtime fan of the show, or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with actress Wendy McClendon Covey and her story, My First French Kiss. We all have this story, am I right? I mean, unless you're an absolutely horrible kisser and you never stuck your tongue down someone else's throat. But anyway, it's a great story. And Wendy, as you know, is just fantastic. What a talent. So definitely go back and listen to that. But now you guys are in for a real treat because I'm sitting across from the one and only Hannes Finney, who, as you guys know, was on Storyworthy the first 6 years. Now, Hannes is here to help me continue celebrating Storyworthy's 7th anniversary, and I couldn't be more thrilled. Speaking of sevens, 7 has always been my lucky number. Do you guys have a lucky number? Is that stupid? Well, I have a lucky number, and it's 7. First of all, I was born on the 7th, January 7th. My daughter was born on the 16th, but 1 plus 6 is 7, exactly. And it's 2017, yeah, exactly. So I'm all about the number 7. That's what I'm saying. Now, today, Hannes brings forth the topic, finding closure. And when I think of this, I think about a challenge, right? Like ending jobs, ending relationships, accepting a diagnosis. And it's hard, man. I mean, finding closure in something, like it comes down to time, right? Like it's just a certain period of time has to pass before you can really find closure. Anyway, you guys, we're going to hear Hannes' story in just a second. But you guys want to give me an anniversary gift? You want to give me a gift, do you? It's 7 years on the air, 7 years of podcasting. That's like 100 years in dog years, I swear to God. Here's what you do. You just give me 5 stars and a good review on Apple Podcasts. That's it. That's all I want from you. I don't need a card. I don't need a gift. Just get over there to Apple Podcasts and give me a good review. Would you do that? Thank you. All right, you guys, he's here right now. Hannes Finney is a comedian and an actor, and you've seen him in more things than you realize. For instance, you remember the mummy driving the bus in that Walgreens spot? Oh, yeah, that was Hannes. You remember the Santa Claus and the Best Buy commercial? Hannes. And so many other wonderful spots. Hannes can be found over on Twitter at HannesPH, and of course, you can find him on Facebook. And you really should be friends with him because he's smart and he's funny and he is and always will be one of my very best friends. So you guys, really, wherever you are, put your hands together for the one and only Hannes Finney.
I got one of those phone calls last year. You know the kind of phone call, I mean the bad news phone call. Not the kind of bad news that comes out of the blue and smacks you right on your ass because you just weren't expecting it. The kind of bad news that is really in no way a surprise that you knew inevitably you would be receiving this phone call. That kind of bad news that you've seen coming for years, and it still knocks you on your ass. My brother Dave, schizophrenic. He spent the last 30 years, really, probably more than 30 years, eating junk food and smoking and smoking and smoking and smoking. That was his primary. So when I got a call saying that he had cancer of the tongue, which had spread to the throat, that was a call I'd been expecting. I knew that at some point I would get a call saying your brother has cancer. I wouldn't get a call saying anything else. I'd get that. And so, of course, I thought I was completely prepared. But as usual, I was full of shit. Now, like a lot of performers, I've always felt very separate from the rest of my family. But my mom and my dad have been gone for a long time. And I suddenly realized that once my brother was gone, there would literally be no more family to be separate from. Last man standing. Not the Tim Allen show. This was about my brother having cancer, so this was much funnier than any show with Tim Allen in it. Now, as always, to me, anything that has to do with my family has to have a catch. It's never normal. In this case, the fact was I was literally going to call my brother within 2 weeks of getting this call, saying that we already had a trip planned to Milwaukee, my first one in 7 years. Now, Sherry, my wife, or as I like to call her, the wife. I love, by the way, the phrase, the wife, because it's vaguely sexist, but it also makes it sound like a position that you really had to go to work for, like the doctor and the professor. Also, I like to just use it on Facebook so that friends of friends, people I don't know, can yell at me on Facebook. And I enjoy being yelled at through typing. That's always a good thing. So she had gotten me tickets to my first Green Bay Packer game at Lambeau Field. I had seen Green Bay Packers many years ago at Milwaukee County Stadium. Five people know what I'm talking about. Now, but I had never been to the amazing Lambeau Field, which if you don't know is a shrine, and if you don't know why it's a shrine, then I want you to turn this off because you don't deserve to hear the rest of my story. Anyhow, so this was already going to be happening. But now, that's months away. But first, I had to go alone to see my brother. He was in a rehab center. A rehab center apparently is what a nursing home is now called. I don't know why they thought rehab center would sound better than nursing home, but whatever. And incredibly, he was not the person in the worst shape in the rehab center. There were people who were so obese they could not get out of bed. They were in wheelchairs with like one leg. It's a long list. There was a paraplegic. But incredibly, my schizophrenic brother with cancer, not the worst guy in here. He could still walk around, could kind of still talk, which meant he could still ask me to go buy him cigarettes. Yeah, what the fuck? You still want cigarettes? But of course, what else am I going to do? He's going to stop smoking at this point? That would be sort of pointless. So I'd go get him, and then we would go outside of the rehab center. Now, this is fall in Wisconsin, so it's 40 goddamn degrees. So we're standing out there freezing, and I watch him smoke. Great. Awesome. Awesome. Now, we get to the trip that my wife and I are taking in December because the game is on Christmas Eve. And I'm going to have to do what I'm doing my whole life when dealing with my family, and especially when I lived in Milwaukee, which is extreme compartmentalizing. So I'd be like, okay, we're going to go see my brother, and this next 2 hours is going to suck. It's going to suck. It's going to smell bad. Everything is going to be terrible. But when we leave, we're going to go to Culver's and get deep-fried cheese curds. So that 2 hours is going to be just fine. Now, by this point, my brother's in worse shape, but still good enough to make me get him goddamn cigarettes and watch him smoke them in what is now 5-degree weather. Finally, in February, I have to make my last trip there. I got a call from the nurse saying, you can't afford to wait any longer, like until spring for better weather, you better come now. So I go there. By now, he's in bed pretty much all the time. He's way skinnier. He still wants fucking cigarettes. I've never hated cigarette executives so much in my life as this. I have to go buy him cigarettes. Now, I have to get him out of the bed, put him in a wheelchair, roll him down the hallway, take him outside to where now it's February in Wisconsin and it's below zero, and the nurse had told me he was still smoking. We both rolled our eyes at that. What she failed to mention is that he's now too weak to hold the cigarette. So now I get him in the wheelchair, which is a whole operation. I roll him down the hallway. I take him outside where it's February in Wisconsin, and now it's below zero. And I have to hold the cigarette up to his lips so he can suck it down, and I can see it just turning to ash. We do two of those. I roll him back in. That, believe it or not, was our last good night. The next day, he's in bed. He's asleep. If he wakes up and looks at me, he turns away. Nothing. It's all downhill from there. I fly back to LA. 2 days later, I get a call. He's passed away. Not unexpected, obviously, by any means, but now I certainly can't afford to fly back one more time, especially for a guy who's not there. I'm not very sentimental about the dead, like about grave sites and things like that. People go. I know people like this. They go to grave sites and they talk to the tombstone. I'm sorry. I'm just like, that guy's not there. They're not there. That's just me. So we arrange for the funeral home to cremate and for them to mail me the ashes. And now I'm just in a no man's land because it's like I should be grieving. Yet I just saw him, yet I didn't see him die. And then finally a package comes from the United States Postal Service with a big stamp outside that says cremated remains. And you're like, boy, they really, you know, they really want the mailman to know that he needs to, not leave this in the sun and let it get stolen or something. I don't know what the point is of the big red stamp that says cremated remains. What we decide to do. Now, the wife, Sherry, the wife, she's a bit more spiritual than I am. She likes things. She's not so churchy as she is spiritual. So we decide we'll drive up the California coast and we will spread his ashes on a beach. That sounds good to me. Okay, but it's all just rather vague still. And we drive up. We're in the city of Ventura. We go past there. We're just kind of looking for a place. We have no plan. And we see a parking sign for a state beach, and we pull in. And the guy says, it's kind of an older guy, park ranger. He's like, oh, well, you know, it's like 10 bucks to park here. So what you probably want to do is you want to go around, go back out. You can park out on the highway, and then you come walk in here. And we're doing a U-turn, and I'm like, that's so weird. That guy sounds like he's from Wisconsin. This is too weird. I have to ask this guy. And I ask him. He's not from Wisconsin. He's from right there. He's totally from California, but for some reason, he kind of talks like this, which is the only reason I stopped to talk to him. So now we tell him, he's like, what are you looking to do? Get some beach glass? I'm like, yeah, beach glass. That's what we're looking for. Because I know that technically it's illegal to spread someone's ashes. So I don't want to feel like telling a government official that. He's like, what you want to do is you want to go up to Loon Beach. It's about 20 miles up that way. You go this way, you go that way, you go this way, you go that way. And we're like, all right, what the hell? And we drive there. And it's so incredibly hard to find. It's in a weird neighborhood. But finally, we pull up and I see a guy in Green Bay Packer gear coming back toward the parking lot. And I go, were you just at Loon Beach? Where is it? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's down that way. So I'm like, all right, this is the second Wisconsin sign. So this is definitely, I'm not usually with the signs, but the sign seems to be rolling up in this. And we go down there, and it's the most beautiful beach I've ever seen. Do you ever see the end of Planet of the Apes? When he finds the Statue of Liberty, and they're big, like, giant cliffs on the water? It's like that without the Statue of Liberty. It's just gorgeous. It's gorgeous beyond belief. So I sort of surreptitiously make a hole in the sand and where the water is lapping up, and I put in the ashes, and I'm like, all right, and I'm just, to myself, I'm just kind of saying, all right, Dave, you never had a chance. You never had a chance, but here, now you're on the beach, and it just rolls out, and we're walking back to the car in the parking lot, and then I'm thinking, like, there's a weird bunch of coincidences that, was I looking for Wisconsin things that I wanted to find this beach? And then I look up and I realize I didn't even think about it. My brother was mentally ill, and it's called Loon Beach. And I just started laughing because it's like, that's the kind of stupid joke that the universe always plays on me, that my loony brother should be laid to rest at Loon Beach. And finally, this is months after his dying, I finally felt like I had closure.
Wow, Hannes. I didn't know that. Is that in Ventura?
It's past Ventura.
So what's the town called?
I don't know. I think it's near Carpinteria.
Yeah. So you buried all the ashes or just some of them?
No, we just let them. I basically kind of put them down and about put them right where the surf was coming up so it would lap up while we were there and take them out to the ocean.
But what is it? It's a can of ashes? It's a box of ashes?
It's a black box. When you open the black box, there is a plastic bag inside filled with ashes. I'm guessing that, you know, this is why people want urns and vases, because it's weird when it's just the plastic bag and you realize, you know, this is where the practicality comes in, which I left out of the story, but I'll tell you now, which is you think to yourself, huh, okay, as a practical matter, I don't want to touch this. So we stop at the 99-cent store, and we get like a spatula, like a cooking spoon, like a big spoon, like a ladle, yeah, but the flat kind. Also, it's around Easter time, and we need a bucket, and I see there's a bucket that says Happy Easter on it, and all I can think of is that when I was a little kid, when my brother and I were both little kids, and my dad had a reel-to-reel tape recorder, which was the iPhone of its time. Must have weighed 110 pounds. We were like, ooh, we have a reel-to-reel. And there's a recording of me that was a recurring joke in my family of me going, Happy Easter! And I was 20. No, I was like 6 or something. So when I see it says Happy Easter on the thing, I'm like, okay, this is the first of the weird coincidences. So basically what I did is at the parking lot, I cut open the bag of ashes. I pour it into the festive Easter basket with a ladle in it and walk down to the ocean, Mr. Smooth, because it's like I'm just making sandcastles alone with my wife with a spatula. Like, if you wanted to look suspicious, now I realize perhaps if you were bothering to look for it. So then I'm just sort of digging things up, and then I'm ladling things out, and it's really weird, but it's also like just a real lesson in we're just some sort of weird chemical, mechanical hybrid, electric hybrid. Our brains are the thing that make us special, and they are just computers that often don't work right. I've got things in my brain that don't work right. My brother had many more things. You, Christina, I know have many, many things wrong with your brain.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's just to think that we're special, but we're also special because we're not remotely special.
Yeah.
We're just elements. And when you're ladling out ashes, you're like, the sand and the ashes look the same. And we're all, what do they say? We're all made of stardust, because there is everything on Earth, every piece of matter on Earth began as stardust that got sucked into the Earth's gravity. So every person is literal, every animal, everything on Earth is literally made of stardust. You never heard this before?
You're looking at me. How about plastic?
Plastic is made of oil.
Oh, and how's that stardust?
I'm saying everything on Earth. There wasn't anything on Earth. There wasn't water and there wasn't land. There was this planet. The planet had gravity and started pulling in material around it. Stardust is not ethereal. It's physical. It's like sand.
Hmm.
And that is the building block of everything on Earth. All the matter on Earth, the building block, is from stardust, which is a physical thing, not like a metaphysical.
So that's when they say earth or dust to dust or
dust to dust,
ashes to ashes.
And the one, I can't remember who said it now, unfortunately, but you know, it's like every single human being is made of stardust, which is a way, you know. And by the way, that's one of those things where it sounds great if you're like a good person and the person you're saying it to is a good person, you know, we're all made of stardust. But if you're fucking like Donald Trump and Kellyanne Conway, it's like, oh, shit, they're made of stardust?
Yeah.
Son of a... Oh, my God, okay, this really takes the bottom out of that theory.
So let me ask you, did you look in that black box before you opened it there on that beach?
Yes, I had to know what was in the black box.
Right, I would too.
I had to know, because it was a kind of a nice-looking black box. I'm like, this might be the thing. Like, if you don't get a vase, they pour it in a black box. But it didn't seem sealed enough.
And so how much are you, I'm just, because I have never seen a cremated body. Is it look like a 5 pound bag of sugar? Or I mean, what is it? How much weight are we talking about? Or how many? Is it fill the bucket?
Yeah, I'm gonna say it was more than 5 pounds. I'm gonna say 7 pounds.
And do you see bone fragments and stuff, or is it just ash?
I don't know. I saw a couple of things that might have been.
Oh, Jesus.
But I don't.
Honest?
But you're not sure.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is all so, like, huge.
Yeah, but I need, I mean.
You needed the closure.
Well, I need
you
the
did
closure,
the
right
thing.
It would be nice to have a funeral, but I can't go back and, like, you know.
You had just been there. You
I
were
just,
there in December.
I literally just
you were there
been
in February.
There. I was there in December, in October, December, and February.
3 times you saw him in the last
right.
few months of his life.
Right.
That's
and
beautiful.
They were at first they were like he could last 3 months, he could last a year. As it turned out, he lasted about 6 months.
Well, the good news is he really knew you were there, Hannes. And
yes.
I know I hear you talking about cigarettes and I know your disdain for them and I get it because I don't like cigarettes either. But you know, you did him a really good favor by taking him out to smoke. Crazy,
I know I
but
did.
If that's
his the
only
crazy
pleasure,
part.
Let him have it,
right?
Right,
exactly. No. I know. It was just the when I had to hold it, and it's like he's sucking it down, and I'm like, if he sucks it down too far, he's going to burn my finger. So I'm holding it up to a dying man's lips.
Well, couldn't you get another cigarette? Aren't there 20 in a pack or something?
Yeah, no, he smoked 2 of them. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by
so
the way,
that's the power of nicotine, though. That's nicotine.
Yeah,
and that's why they, you know, people that never start smoking don't get it. I've never smoked, so I don't really get it. But I do know, like my nephew smokes, and when you are addicted, it's like telling you, "Don't breathe anymore, Hannes." Is there a problem
yes,
with
exactly.
that? Just
by
don't
the
breathe.
Way, your nephew disrespectful to me on Facebook, and I put up
that.
My disdain of the cigarette. He said, "Well, you know," said the man eating 5 bratwurst, and he had a point. I'm not saying that. I mean,
okay, so
I,
what did he say?
No, it was something about the guy who's eating. You know, it's like you're eating. You know, I'm smoking.
Oh, says
and you're
the guy
eating cigarettes.
Who's eating too much food.
Yeah, eating a brat.
Well, there's a huge difference, and that's a
well,
really
that's
elementary,
my,
stupid
know,
response by him. But he's, you know, he's
no,
just throwing
he's
against.
He's a millennial.
Yeah, he's
by
a
the
kid.
Way,
he's not a,
a
kid, but he. But you
I
know,
put up
to
a
us,
post on Facebook the other day that got a huge response. It was just I love to hear a 26-year-old complain about millennials.
Yeah,
because all I work with are 26-year-olds who are complaining about 20-year-olds.
Yeah,
it's like you're all horrible.
Yeah, so
but,
you can't get past that.
But also, millennials are just the latest generation of assholes. We're all assholes.
And people,
let's face
yeah,
facts.
I know, but people that are addicted to nicotine, they don't want to give it up because that is
well,
what they
it's
have
just,
to have.
Cigarettes, in a way, wow, this will go very far afield. In a way, it's related to guns in this way. See, okay, I eat too much sausage. Absolutely. But eating something that's fattening and bad for you is a bad version of something you have to do, which is eat. You don't have to smoke at all.
Right.
Smoking is a completely unnecessary, unneeded thing. There is no such thing as anybody would smoke if they weren't addicted to it. And then in my head, it goes to guns because people are like, well, you can kill somebody with a car or a
yeah,
baseball
guns
bat.
Kill people. People
right.
kill people.
But they say like, well, look, you can kill someone with a car. It's like, yes, you can, but you're perverting the importance. The purpose of the car is to transport people, and then you can pervert it and take it away from its actual purpose and kill someone. Guns' purposes are to kill people.
Right.
Like, it's not a perversion of a automatic weapons purpose to kill 14 people. That's what it's built for. Okay, that's just the way my mind works. I go into these
no,
little tangents.
No, I get it. But the thing is with smoking, you know, just that if once you're addicted, you can't see the light because it's like breathing
well,
to me and you.
You know, the wife... But Sherry, her name is Sherry. She says that she used to smoke for years.
Yeah, she did, didn't she?
She did. And
how did she
I
stop?
Said, how did you say? And she said, you know when I quit? When I raised the cigarette taxes in Georgia to like $5 a pack.
Wow.
And she just, all of a sudden, it was like, God knows what, $6-$7 a pack? Or that's what it is. Whatever it was, it suddenly like doubled. And she just went, fuck it.
Good for her, man.
And she, so it's like, and they say things like, well, raising taxes won't stop people. It will. It'll
it
stop
could.
Some people.
It could.
It'll
yeah.
stop some people.
Yeah.
You know, the idea, and that was the other thing. It's like, just we'll get off cigarettes in a minute, but it's like, I would go and buy him these, and it's like, they're so fucking expensive.
What did he smoke, by the way? I'm just curious.
Marlboro Unfiltered.
That's like a very common brand, I believe. And like Camels or something. In terms of like being one of the harsher brands.
You know,
it's not
so funny
like
because
a...
I would, in the over the years, of course, I bought him plenty of cigarettes. And it's like, you know, I'd be getting him some cheap brand and he'd be like, you know, being like looking a gift horse in the mouth. It's like, dude, you're fucking burning something and sucking into your lungs. Can this really, the taste really be that different? Also, I don't care.
Yeah.
Also, this was a very frustrating and complicated relationship. Luckily for me and my brother, we grew up in Milwaukee, which has an old German socialist background. Not nationalist, socialist, but like it's like, so they have like county agencies that were able to keep him in apartments and keep him from being homeless and being on the street. Unlike, say, L.A., where there's a homeless person every 5 feet. And I know 95% of those people are mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no structure
well,
to
there
help
is
them.
Here in L.A., but there's just too many people. I mean,
there's
it's
too many people,
game.
But it's not it's not as well run. Milwaukee is one of those places where they just got that old fashioned, like they've been doing it forever. Anyhow, so everybody moved to Milwaukee. This is what I'm saying.
So he must have been so glad, though, that at least you were there. Did he have any friends, Hannes?
Friends? No.
And because he was schizophrenic, mentally ill.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is like when I saw him in the rehab center, it was interesting because in a way, it was the place he should have been the whole time. Now, where he had been is they had gotten him and they would receive his disability money and they would pay the rent on various apartments. And he was just smoking and being alone or knocking on people's doors at 3 in the morning.
Who fed him? How did he get food?
He would get Meals on Wheels.
I see.
Things like that.
Okay.
He would get $10 a day from them out of his money. They had power of attorney.
But he had no structure in terms of like group therapy or anything?
Not really. There's not, you know, he had meds. The meds in the past 15 years have advanced gigantically.
Yeah.
So he was technically better in the past 15 years than he had been. Still not great. And so now I go see him. He's in the rehab center. So he's like in there. There's people. There's staff. There's nurses on call all the time. And it's like, fucking A. If we could have, there's no way it could have happened. But it's like, he should have been here the whole time.
Yeah.
Where he would have like, there are people and they know his name and they talk to him and he could do this. And if he fell and hurt himself, there'd be someone there to help him. And it's like, he only got there at the end of his life.
And how old was he when he passed?
59.
59. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He's older than me.
So you do feel then you got closure in that.
I didn't. Well, what I feel is I didn't get closure until I was able to do the beach.
Interesting.
Because the whole, it was all open-ended. You know, I'm like, okay, we're going in December and we don't have a lot of money. So we'll go in December. And then it's like,
you got to see that game. That was fun.
Yeah. And then,
that
was a whole
that was
other,
really
that was just bizarre. It's like, let's what? Drive up. Well, you know, it was just that compartmentalization thing where it's like, it was the worst circumstance you can be in. And now tomorrow I'm going to drive up to Green Bay and have one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
And you did.
And I did.
Did they win that game?
They did win that game.
I'm so glad.
Yes, they did. They
was it freezing cold?
No, it was merely 35 degrees.
Oh God.
Well, we'd been in Chicago a couple of days before that, and it was below zero.
I see.
So it was just like biting razor blades.
Yeah.
So a week later, when we get up to Green Bay and there's sun and 35 degrees, even Sherry is like, this feels fantastic.
Yeah.
That's what people don't get about the winter is it's all relative.
Yeah.
When it was zero yesterday and it's 28 today, you feel fine.
Yeah. I remember in Pittsburgh, it'd be 45 or 50, and people are like, oh, yeah, it's going to be 50 tomorrow. That's great.
Yeah, people start
like,
playing.
No, it's not.
They start
great.
Playing football in shorts. Yeah, it's all relative.
Yeah.
Today in L.A., it was like 89 degrees.
Yeah.
And I always used to, because I grew up in the cold, I always used to say I would always rather be too hot than too cold. But this past couple of years in L.A., it's been fucking
I'd rather be
hot.
Cold.
Now I'm like,
I think
okay,
I'd rather
maybe
be cold,
I can be cold for a
put
while.
Put a jacket on and all that.
Yeah, because you just start melting.
But listen, I think this idea of compartmentalizing difficult times is really smart, right? It's like sometimes when you have to put your phone down and deal with somebody face-to-face or have a conversation or do something that's important, compartmentalize it and just do that.
Yeah, there is an aspect of that. And it may or may not be smart, but it's just necessary.
It's the way you get through.
And it's the only way to get through it. Right. And if you can't, then you're... Because I used to... It took me a long time. Like, I left Milwaukee and I went to Madison, to the University of Wisconsin. And it's like, I couldn't have any fun because I would suddenly think, well, Dave can't have any fun. How can I have fun? And it's like, it took a long time to realize that it didn't matter to him if I was having fun or not.
Yeah, but that was when you were like 20 years old. You were a kid understanding that, yes. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, in other words, your brother wasn't schizophrenic from birth. He became schizophrenic.
Yeah, in his teen years, but he was older than me. So, you know, I'm like 11 or 12.
Right.
And then all the attention goes to him.
I know, but you could see why for you at 18, 19, going off to school, you would have a hard time, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But I think that there are people who never figure it out that your happiness or your enjoyment of life does not affect other people's happiness or not happiness. A family member like this, it's like, is thrust upon you. So I didn't feel like guilty because
he's your blood, because you didn't have a choice ever.
It's like, I didn't have a choice ever. And it was never going to be, and I had all sorts of problems growing up, but they were never going to be as big as his problems.
Right.
So I was never going to feel like my problems were worthy of solving compared to his problems, which could not be solved.
Oh.
Or that, you know, and I wouldn't get attention. And there's a whole many, I could do literally a whole podcast entirely about how messed up my parents were and how goofy they were, and realizing that they were both very childish. I mean, undeveloped.
But they did the best they could, as it were. We would like to think.
They did the best they could, but that's like saying Donald Trump is doing the best he can. Guess what? Donald Trump is doing the best he can. That doesn't mean it's good enough.
Right. Right.
That right. You know, it's like.
But your parents weren't trying to be president either. I mean, in other words, right. he's in the wrong realm.
Using it as an example. It's like, let's say that I try to fix the brakes on your car and I do the best I can and your brakes fail and drive into a canyon. It doesn't matter that my intent was to, it doesn't matter to do the best you can if you're incredibly bad at it. You know, that's, you can't, you know, say about your parents, it's like, well, should they have kids? Well, then I wouldn't be here if they didn't have
you
kids.
You have such a good ability, Hannes, you have such an ability to break shit down, man.
I'm the breaker, baby.
No, but you've always been able to do that. Every time I've had a problem and I've come to you, you're able to go and sort it out. Like, no, that's that and this is that. And you're mixing it together and that's why you're getting all convoluted.
Right. And people do that shit all the time. And I've done it. I've done it a million times where it's like, yeah, you can't take... Yeah, people take their problems and they think, you know, like in a movie, it's like, it's always like there's the villain, right? And he's trying to kill the hero. And then it always turns out that they knew each other when they were in school, or the villain blames him for the death of his wife. And it's like, that's not how real crime works. And that's not how real life works. It's like, these things are all separate. It's like, yeah, it took me years to realize that my family would have been dysfunctional even if my brother had not been schizophrenic.
Interesting.
I was like, well, he's schizophrenic and that's why my family's like this. And then suddenly one day in my 20s, I went, wait a fucking minute. That just came along for a fucking shit icing on the cake. The cake was already there.
Mm.
My parents were dysfunctional when we were kids and my brother was not showing any signs of schizophrenia because it doesn't show up usually until you're a teenager.
Right. I wonder why that is. I've always heard that. That schizophrenia shows up when your hormones are changing and the imbalance of things.
Maybe kids are just so weird that you can't tell that they're... I mean, all kids are weird. There was kids in the park today. There was a kid. He was just running around and being just... He just... All of a sudden, he just went, arr, 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 and he started running around. And his mother goes, oh, he's a monster now. No, he's like five. So if he wants to turn to a monster, what the fuck do I care? But maybe he'll want to turn to a monster when he's 25. And then you go, oh, well, that kid is fucked up. You can't tell the difference between a mentally ill person and a five-year-old. It's the same thing.
Okay, so you do feel like you have closure now on this whole situation.
Yes, and then I did have a little closer cherry on the top later, which is I hadn't really cried about it. And this is just so perfectly me. The wife and I are watching Grumpier Old Men on HBO.
Well,
not,
sure.
Not Grumpy Old Men.
No, the second one.
The second one, sure. Grumpier Old Men.
Sure.
And Burgess Meredith is Jack Melamed's dad, and he's 98 years old. And then he sitting on the couch by the lake, because that's what he does. And then Jack Lemmon goes over there, and he's dead.
Oh.
And he's 98 years old, obviously. It's very sad. And now, suddenly, I'm fucking bawling.
Aww.
It's like 2 in the afternoon, and I'm watching Grumpy Old Men, which is 20 years old, and I've seen it 5 times.
I'm crying and about suddenly, that. I'm crying exactly. That the fact is so you're watching like, this movie in the middle of the afternoon.
I know. It's really quite sad. Yeah, so like that's the trigger, then suddenly I'm crying.
Will you ever go back to Milwaukee?
I'm going to Milwaukee in less than a week.
And who will you see there?
I will
there?
See my... I have cousins out there. I also have cousins from out of town in Illinois, and they are going to come up and see us. So I wanted Sherry to see Milwaukee when we could just go have fun.
Yeah.
Because now there's no... It's gone. It's done. There's no impediments. There's nothing we have to go do that's terrible. Also, it won't be the middle of winter. Sherry really liked Milwaukee, and she liked Chicago, and they were both in the middle of winter. I was like, well, if you like them then, we really ought to try and go see them.
You know, it's funny. I mean, I've known you for almost 20 years. It'll be 20 years. It is 20 years in August. It's 20 years I've known you. For people out there who don't know, I met Hannes. You were the second person I met in Los Angeles.
That's right. Who was the first one again?
Jim Cole. A guy named right. James Cole.
No penis.
That's right. But that's not the point. The point
certainly
is...
isn't the point. God damn it. I will never get sick of that joke.
Anyway... It wasn't a joke. That's the sad part. But the point is I met you so long ago, and Dave has always been in our conversations because, you know, he would, of course, call you 10 times a day or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Because of his illness, and you were his only lifeline. So it wasn't just that he was your brother. You were his everything. And now he's gone, and I'm so sorry for you. It's really sad.
Well, I mean, in many ways, I do feel like he's better off, and yet you're just like... this is, you know, it's
and
like,
he,
that's what I really felt like, because I spent a lot of time resenting him and a lot of time being angry and a lot of time feeling guilty for resenting him. But when I found out this diagnosis, I thought that the poor motherfucker never had a chance.
Yeah.
He never had a chance. And by the way, the reason I never smoked is that when I was in high school, we lived next door to my aunt and uncle and their three children who were our cousins. The two boys were teenagers. They smoked. The mother smoked. The father smoked. The only one that didn't smoke was my girl cousin. And you would go into this house and come out smelling like you had spent 45 days in a bar.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And my cousin, of course, had a fantastic pornography collection, which in those days it was in a filing cabinet. Now, kids, pornography used to be on physical pages. So naturally, I would want to go over there all the time.
Yeah.
And even sometimes I was like, I want to look at this, what now would seem to be the bushiest porn in the world, and probably just not attractive. God, just imagine the hair on people in the 70s.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Everybody.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. You probably couldn't see a thing, frankly. It was like they were wearing suits.
Yeah.
But anyhow, it's like, I'd be like, God. It stinks over there.
So you didn't want to go over to look at porn because of the
I know. Smoke. Well, I still did because I was 13.
I remember,
but it's like, it stank so bad. And I'm always like, if that's how you, if you don't want your kids to smoke, then you need to take them once a week to somebody's house that has been smoking for 20 years.
Yeah.
And they will never smoke.
So gross.
They'll never smoke.
Gross. Well, I remember when they, you know, outlawed cigarettes in restaurants in California first, but then it trickled down to Pennsylvania. And I remember my father would say, this is never going to work. There is no way people are going to come to a restaurant and not be able to smoke. And now, of course, there's no smoking in restaurants. But to think that there ever was, I mean, it was bizarre. And, you know, I was a flight attendant.
Yeah.
And we used to have
smoking
it on every single row. Anybody could smoke. And then they stopped that in, like, say, 90, 90, 91, 92. And they would say, like, okay, you can smoke from rows 17 to 20. It's like, what are you talking about?
Oh, I know.
Or first class would be 4 rows, and you could smoke in the first 2, but not rows 3 and 4. I mean, so it was just a joke.
Oh, I know. Well, I don't know. You're making me think very specifically of Ma Fisher's, my favorite diner in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And it's this big diner, awesome gyros. Oh, so good.
And when you say gyro, you mean lamb.
I mean gyro. Is that a lamb? The lamb euro, right. Anyhow, and so kind of had two, basically in the middle was sort of that counter thing where the old men sit and watch TV and read the newspaper. And then on either side, there was kind of a dining room. And after at some point, it was that dining room is smoking and this dining room is not smoking. There's no partition. There's no glass. Well, it was just like, well, that guy's smoking 4 feet over there. What the fuck? I'm going to be a non-smoking. I was better off outside.
Yeah.
This didn't, I remember that when they first started to pull that off. And yeah, people are always like, you can't do, that's the thing about, I don't know, progressive change is like people always say you can't do things. Do you remember, because we were in high school, when they passed Carter, signed a law, it was the handicapped, I don't remember what it's called. It was a law that it said that all buildings had to have a handicap capable entrance.
Right.
And all corners, curbs, yeah, needed to have,
sure,
that flatness.
An access.
And they were like, this is insanity. We can never fucking do this. This is the craziest thing in the world. They fought it and it got passed. And now every single building has a ramp.
Yeah.
And every single corner in the entire country is flat. And you can roll a wheelchair.
And
down.
I appreciated that when I had my child, so I could push the stroller.
Exactly, it's good for all sorts of stuff, and it's like, and nobody even thinks about it for 1 second.
Yeah,
the smoking thing reminded me of around later after we started banning it in various places in the U.S. They banned smoking indoors in pubs in Ireland. And
that
I was like, this is
incredible.
Insanity.
Yeah, that's incredulous.
I was like, this will never hold up. That was 20 years ago or whatever the hell it is. It's still, people go outside and they smoke.
No worries. Yeah.
In Ireland.
Yeah.
Because guess what? People don't want to drink your fucking smoke in.
Yeah.
They don't. People are still, I have people at work. I have to like direct them to, you know, they're like, oh, the smoking section. I'm like, well, there used to be, but now you have to go up to this other place. And they're, yeah, just like, duh. And they're so angry about it. Like, what? Talk about entitlement.
Yeah, in other words, why do you think anybody wants to smell all that smoke around you? Yeah, if you eat bratwurst, that's your problem. It's not going to affect
you. Right. And by the way, don't get me started on the vaping.
What's wrong with vaping? You can't smell it.
Yes, you can. And it smells really? Like, they usually smell like fucking strawberries and some shit like that. And they you suck this disgusting strawberry vapor, not smoke, but vapor, and you blow it out. And now I'm breathing the disgusting artificial strawberry-flavored vapor that was in your lungs.
There's not like a vape cloud that hangs over you.
But
if you
there
smoke
is.
If you smoke a cigarette, there's a cloud.
You should see these people with the vaping. There's a cloud. And they
really
feel free to vape everywhere. And they're walking and these giant fucking clouds of vapor. And just, I have no idea. Although I'll say this again. It's basically, it's some weird machine that's doing this. The odds of that being healthy, the odds of that, this weird vapor-making machine not causing some completely different kind of cancer, it seems pretty slim to me.
You're not going to get it because you only
vape for weed.
What do people vape for if you're not smoking pot? What are you vaping for?
It's a substitute for smoking.
I see.
They're just like sucking.
I see.
Like, I'm not talking about, here, let me take a vape or two to get some marijuana oil into my system.
Yeah.
That's like a person who takes a drink of a beer. I'm talking about people doing shots.
I see.
Remember, we had some crazy author that on Storyworthy, and he fucking just in the middle of it, he couldn't fucking help himself. He's doing the interview, and he pulls out in the studio this vape thing and just vapes up a fucking storm. Do you remember this guy?
Jupiter Diego.
Was that his name?
He passed away.
From vaping.
So,
but it was disgusting. It was
this
weird like fake cherry or strawberry smell, and he's filling the room with the vapor.
Well,
and he's already insane, so I already want the thing. May he rest in peace. He was out of his fucking mind. And I already wanted the interview to be over, so yeah. I didn't bother to stop and go, listen,
what are you doing?
What are you doing? And this wasn't here at your home. This was at
Sideshow
Network.
Yeah, I remember.
This was a big office building in a professional studio. And it was weird because he didn't ask or anything. He just like had his hand shaking and he's got to start fucking vaping on the shit. And it's like, you're addicted to vaping. He was obviously an addictive personality.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's not as disgusting as cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's not disgusting.
Okay, listen.
But let's get back to...
You do feel like you got closure now that your brother passed.
Apparently not about the vaping, but everything else seems to be
fine.
But
I do feel like I've known you for 20 years, and I feel like you got some good closure. And I think that Dave, the fact that you got to see him three times before he passed away, you got to be there. He knows that you loved him. He knows that you were there. And I do feel like, all in all, you had some closure there, yeah?
I absolutely did.
Thank you so much for telling this story, because it's really, it's personal and it's important, and we've never talked about this on
the show
before.
Yeah, it took up most of my year, frankly. I had all sorts of other things to deal with. I was like, I can't deal with any of these things.
Yeah.
I got this to deal with.
Do you feel like now there's like a weight off your shoulders in a way? Because you're not going to get those phone calls every
day? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're getting to the age where suddenly it'll be like, hey, you know, on Facebook, that person that you went to high school with who really isn't that old, because you're not really that old, just died.
Yeah.
Once anybody gets past 50, as I think Louis C.K.
said,
everybody's a candidate.
Yeah, my Louis C.K.?
Louis C.K., he was like, it was a good bit. It was something along the lines of, now that he was like 45 or something, and he said, when I turn 50... You know, like if I die at 45, people are like, my God, what did Louis C.K. die of? If he dies at 50, people go, oh, okay.
Yeah, I see.
Because once you're 50 years old,
shit.
People are like, yeah, you could, you know, it's not, I mean, but
no,
again,
I know.
We just, did you watch on HBO, there's a documentary called If You're Not in the Obituaries, Eat Breakfast?
No.
By Carl Reiner. And it's all about people in show business in their 90s.
Yeah.
And we have no idea. Friggin' David Bowie dies at 69 and Mel Brooks is still alive.
I don't think David Bowie was in 69. He was 64 or something.
No, he was 69.
Really?
I remember because like five celebrities died and they were all 69 years old. It was very strange.
Yeah.
And you realize, God, that's not really that old. And if you're young and listening to this, you think it's old. But it's really, 69 is not that old, especially today.
Shit.
And how many people are living into their 80s and 90s? It's pretty wacky. And three of my grandparents lived into their 80s, and that was a long time ago.
Right.
So technically, if I can cut down on the bratwurst, that seems like pretty good odds, but it's just like you literally have no idea, and you just need to live your life for yourself. And that's a lesson that I learned. It's like, I used to think, I'm going to go far afield here. I used to see like in this place in Milwaukee, in this deli, they would have posters of all these theater shows all over the years from the theaters there. Right around there. And I was like, wow, but if it was like a movie, then it'd still be here. And why even do a play? This is back when I was depressed all the time. Like, why even do a play? Because you do it and then it goes away. It's like, you're not doing it for other people to see it. They just happen to get to see it.
Nice.
You're doing it for yourself.
Boy, I'll tell you what,
and that's it.
From your mouth to God's ears. Right. That's the bottom line. Absolutely. Because you can.
You're doing it. Right. You're doing it.
And you're leaving your mark, man. Just trying to leave your mark. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's so much. And thank you guys out there for tuning in today. I sure do appreciate it. Tweet Hannes over on Twitter at HannesPH and let him know that you liked his story. And then, of course, feel free to follow me over there as well at Storyworthy.
And can I also say, I now have Instagram.
You have Instagram.
HannesPH. HannesPH.
You know, they call it the IG.
Oh, God, they do. I'm already, by the way, the fact that we're using any of these means they're over. Somewhere there's some like teenager is hearing this because their mom's listening to it. And she's like, oh, fucking Instagram. Who are these people?
You guys can always email me at info@storyworthypodcast.com as well. I respond to every single email. Yes, I do.
And join us next week on Storyworthy for a story from the writer of Los Feliz Daycare, Jason Shapiro.
So I picked him up from the airport. We drove right to the In-N-Out on Sunset and Orange. And we ordered burgers, and we put mushrooms on those burgers.
Don't miss Jason Shapiro next week on Storyworthy.
All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And on behalf of the very talented Hannes Finney, thank you so much, really.
Thank you. Jeffrey Glazer owes me $10.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.